Welcome back to another episode of the Beiser Report Radio Podcast. I am publisher Ryan Burns, and joining me, as always, is one of the most elite NDSU athletic minds in all the country. I tell you this every time, and I mean it sincerely, Ross, even though your Packers took down my Vikings at TCF Bank Stadium last night. How are we this Monday afternoon?
We're good. I'd like to do a ton of gloating about that, but the fact is I picked the Vikings by 3. And as much as at the same time, Green Bay still won, it's not quite as sweet when you just completely whiffed on the whole prediction of the game thing and did so in a very public way, which is unfortunate. But the game was at least entertaining, at least for the first half. Obviously, I don't think anybody really expected it to be a 17-point victory. But while we are discussing the green and gold, we do not normally discuss that green and gold on this podcast. So let us soldier on to some Bison athletics.
Yeah, let us soldier on to this Bison team that actually hit the over-under on the head. So it would be a push, winning 55-0 against a very, I will say, depleted Missouri State team. And it was just, from the moment the kickoff happened, Ross, it was a rout.
Yeah, it really was. You know, Missouri State, you and I talked, they weren't a very good team. We sort of talked a little bit about that South Dakota game and, you know, that being a game where NDSU was favored by 35 points, 5 touchdowns. They were favored only by only by 5 more points in this game, but it was just a different matchup. And South Dakota actually finished their season a pretty respectable 5-6. This Missouri Valley team was one of the worst 15 or 20 teams in all of FCS. The Bison, elected to defer, kicked off, and on the third play of the game, Greg Menard, and why on earth you would ever not block Greg Menard, but Greg Menard came unblocked, drilled the quarterback from the backside, and Caleb Butler ended up recovering in the end zone. It was 7-0 Bison, kicked off again, forced a 3-and-out, went down and scored 14-0, and the game was over in the first quarter so far as, you know, any competitiveness was concerned, certainly.
And obviously that route starts with the quarterback, Easton Stick, who had 75% completion percentage on the day, 189 yards and multiple touchdowns. How easy did Easton Stick make it look on Saturday?
Oh, he was fantastic. I asked him after the game what the difference is between, his first game as a starter and how he's feeling right now. And the word that he used was comfortable. I hope to talk to Easton next week and maybe even provide that interview for you guys on next week's podcast. Just so everyone knows, this is a one-show week. Ryan and I are going to spend Thanksgiving with our families and not provide any content for all of you. with that said, Stick was fantastic. He hit his first, as far as I can remember, this was his first multiple touchdown game throwing without throwing a touchdown to R.J. Erzendowski. So that's progress. Connor Wentz had a big game. That's Carson's cousin, not his brother. Connor's actually from Florida, but the two are related. Connor Wentz had a big game, 3 for 49 and a touchdown. And Stick also connected with Jeff Ilias, Bruce Anderson, and Zach Vroff, who we will talk about a little bit later on in the show, for the record breaker. Stick just looked so much more comfortable. They didn't run him a lot in this game, which was, I think, the right play, considering that they're going to need him come playoff time.
They will, and another guy they're going to need absolutely come playoff time, who dominated the game against Missouri State, is Greg Menard. I think we were talking about this pre-show, but I just don't understand how you don't block him. But, you know, whatever Missouri State thought was the right play. But Greg finished with 3 total tackles, 2 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, and a forced fumble. With a guy who's only playing like 70-75% of his groin, he sure knows how to make an impression, Ross.
Yeah, it was so impressive, and that actually prompted me to ask Coach Kleiman in the press conference that I attended today if he felt like Greg and Brad were back, and he didn't. So that makes this performance against Missouri State even more impressive, because Kleiman felt like Menard and Ambrosius both needed this week to continue to get healthy. So to have a game like that where you are completely dominant and in the opponent's backfield causing problems all day long, when you're still not healthy, you know, really is an impressive thing. And at the same time, that's a guy that the coaching staff has targeted as a guy they need to get healthy because he has the potential to cause so many problems for opposing offenses in a playoff situation that you really do want a guy like Menard healthy. And if they do get him back to 100%, as well as the Bison defense has played in these last few games, that just brings an entirely new dimension to the defense, which is a dominant pass rush without having to blitz. And when you can do that, defense all of a sudden becomes really easy.
Speaking of really easy, Ross, how easy was it for this Bison team to run up over 400 yards of rushing offense against an awful Missouri State run defense? We were talking about this, and you know, you were trying to have me be nice about it, but fact of the matter was Missouri State coming into the game was averaging almost 300 yards of rushing against them on the ground. And, you know, the Bison, 48 rushing attempts for 412 yards by 9 different guys. Ross, they love to spread the wealth on this Bison team.
They do, and I think, you know, part of that was, as we discussed, this Missouri Valley State team isn't that good, and there was no reason to give anyone 18 to 20 carries in the case that they might get injured. There's no reason to risk injury against Missouri State. It was clear from the beginning that this was not going to be a very competitive game, and NDSU was able to get out of this game in a relatively good position health-wise. The distribution of the running wealth was a necessary strategy in this game to keep everyone healthy, and it was nice to see specifically Chase Morlock get going a little bit. He's been a guy that the Bison need to get healthy because if you remember the beginning of the season, he was a weapon, especially out of the backfield as a receiver, and he makes this offense a little bit more diverse. Without a John Crockett to give the ball to, 25 to 30 times a game, the Bison have to use this multitude of weapons with these diverse skill sets to be as effective of an offense as they were a season ago. And utilizing all these players that can run the ball is a part of it, especially if you're going to try and run 60 plays a game with something around a 40 to 20 run-pass ratio.
And one specifically special play, Ross, was when Carson Wentz was able to come into the game there and get a nice senior day ovation from the fans. How special was that for Carson, you think?
What was really cool, I think obviously if you were going to do that, and granted you don't do stuff like that with the game still in question, it's probably considered to be in poor taste. At the same time, that ovation came when a lot of the fans had already exited because, you know, the game was so non-competitive. Wentz was brought in at tailback. He told Coach Kleiman that he didn't really think that he could take a snap from center, although he obviously did come out in pads and a helmet. Part of that was just because of the senior day celebration or the senior day ceremony at the Fargo Dome there, but he lined up as a tailback. Third string quarterback Cole Davis took the snap and did a quick handoff to actually Morlock, who was lined up at fullback. They ran just a really quick trap. There was absolutely no danger of Wentz being hit, and at the conclusion of that play then, as Wentz being the kind of the humble kid or just a guy that doesn't like the spotlight all that much that he is, kind of tried to sneak back off the field, and Kleiman gave him a little stiff arm, pushed him back out onto the field and looked at the crowd and started clapping, obviously gesturing for them to give Wentz a standing ovation, which he, you know, so rightfully deserved, and then the crowd obliged. I mean, it was a great moment. If the stadium holds 19,000, there are probably 12,000 people up on their feet giving Wentz a standing ovation. And what a career he's had, and what fun it will be for Bison fans to watch a quarterback in the NFL. I mean, there's 7 or 8, maybe even 9 active, or not active, but Bison in the NFL right now. But there hasn't been a Bison quarterback in the NFL, if ever, for a very long time. Brock Jensen had a little bit of time with the Miami Dolphins in training camp, but never in a game. And I promise you, Carson Wentz is going to have game reps in the National Football League. So just a really cool moment for the program and a really cool moment for Wentz, who was visibly emotional coming off the field.
Another great moment from the Senior Day victory over Missouri State, 55-0, was the Zach Vrah play. Excuse me. I feel like all he does of late is just score touchdowns, but he was able to break another record. How was the Fargo Dome for that play?
Well, that's when it was still mostly full, so that was pretty awesome. Obviously, if you look at the statistics, this is not Zach Vrah's greatest season ever. At the same time, this is a completely different offense. This is an offense that is literally trying to run the ball 50 times a game. So you're not going to have the gaudy numbers that obviously allowed Vrah to be the school's all-time leader in everything, receptions, yards, and touchdowns. But getting him the record was something that the coaching staff talked about through the week. And Coach Kleiman actually said after the game that if the replay booth didn't overturn that call and give Vrah the touchdown, they were going to call the exact same play on the following down because it was that important to get Vrah that record and really recognize how important he has been to this program over the course of the past few years, obviously, at North Dakota State. He's been the best receiver that I've seen in my time being a fan or covering the team, and just an all-around awesome player and a good guy to talk to and a great ambassador for the program. The catch itself was another highlight reel catch. Didn't exactly pin it on the back of somebody again, but it was a very well-covered fade pattern into the back left corner of the end zone, and he was able to get kind of his thigh, butt area, whatever, in bounds, which, as you know, one butt equals 2 feet, or in the college game, one, and was able to maintain possession all the way to the ground, get the touchdown, get the record, and get the ovation that he deserved.
And with the victory on Saturday, NDSU obviously secures a share of another Missouri Valley football title. I mean, I believe it's the fifth straight for the Bison. What do you think that means to this team specifically? Obviously, they've had to go through so much with losing Carson Wentz and five straight Missouri Valley titles. I mean, can you try to put that in perspective for some of these Bison fans?
Well, certainly. And, you know, that was one thing that Kleiman said after the game. Was this was the most special Missouri Valley title that he's been a part of. Considering the adversity that this team's faced, this one was absolutely huge. They lost their leader. Kleiman called Wentz the best player in FCS. They lost the best player in FCS right in the middle of the season, and they still won the conference championship. You know, every NDSU Missouri Valley champion lost one or fewer games during their entire seasons. Obviously, all four were also national champions, but this is a team that went through an opening season loss. That didn't happen to any of the other teams. And went through, you know, the loss of their quarterback and a loss to a team that they shouldn't have lost to in South Dakota State. This team had to deal with a lot of adversity, and I think it just speaks to what an unbelievable program the administration and the coaches have put together. In that an entire recruiting cycle, when these kids that left on senior day were literally redshirt freshmen sitting together in the stands at the first championship in Frisco and now are going out with a conference championship and a top three FCS playoff seed and just as good a chance as anybody of winning yet another FCS championship. It's incredible to see an entire group of five classes go through and have that level of success.
And with the regular season now behind us and the Bison having another share of a Missouri Valley Conference Championship, we should probably move on and talk about the FCS playoff seeds that came out over the weekend. And the big news is that NDSU gets a 3 seed and not a 2 seed, which goes to Illinois State. What did you think about that move that the playoff committee formulated?
I guess, you know, I understand it. Obviously, the conference loss situation is a little bit different as far as NDSU losing to kind of a bad team in USD and Illinois State trashing USD. But at the same time, you know, North Dakota State blew out South Dakota State at their place, and SDSU is the lone conference loss for Illinois State, so it was kind of a crapshoot. I sort of felt then at that point the benefit of the doubt would maybe been given to NDSU just based on the last two times, or the last time Illinois State and NDSU actually played. North Dakota State won, NDSU being the defending champs, maybe getting the respect that they deserve and getting that two seed. And the reason that this whole thing matters, to be honest with you, is that semifinal game where if it goes chalk, North Dakota State's going to have to go to Illinois State and win that game on the road as opposed to hosting that game in the Fargo Dome. And, you know, this tournament almost never goes chalk, but at the same time, that's a tough spot. And I felt certainly, and a lot of people felt that that two seed was actually a race between North Dakota State and McNeese State. But obviously, you know, we were all wrong, and that, you know, very much is Illinois State's number two seed, and that game is going to have to be at Normal. I think what it probably came down to is the non-conference loss. Illinois State's non-conference loss was to Iowa, who is the number three team in FBS, and North Dakota State's non-conference loss is to Montana, who is a playoff team, but they're not even a seeded playoff team in the FCS. And obviously, you know, if you put the quality of the losses up against each other, NDSU had a bad loss to South Dakota and not as impressive of an early season loss to Montana.
I think the other big talker from the seeds being released is one that I know is going to have some spirited discussion from you, Ross, but all five Valley schools that are will be in the FCS playoffs are on the same side of the bracket. NDSU, SDSU, UNI, Western Illinois, and Illinois State. How can you just try to explain to someone how in the heck that happens?
Ryan, if I gave you my actual thoughts on this topic, iTunes would put that little red E next to this podcast. So I'm going to have to try and clean it up a bit here.
Let's give it the PG-13 version, please.
Oh, it's absolutely ridiculous. I just didn't understand what the selection committee was trying to accomplish. I'm not a big conspiracy theorist guy. I don't think that they're punishing the Valley, but it's just so second rate what they did in this day and age. And I understand that this first weekend being, you know, Thanksgiving weekend, not all FCS programs, shockingly, have the following. Well, no FCS program has the following that North Dakota State does, but these Thanksgiving weekend first round games are not well attended. And at the end of the day, the NCAA possibly loses a little bit of money just because of travel costs. So what they've been doing is regionalizing all these games. And obviously conferences are going to be regional because of, you know, in the regular season travel costs. To put the number one conference in the country, and subjectively, the Valley is the number one conference in the country by a pretty reasonable margin. By the numbers, it's wider than that. I mean, the Valley, if you go to, you know, the Sagarin ratings or the Massey ratings or any number crunching you know, website or anything, any resource online, the Valley is so much better than any other FCS conference that to stick them all on that side and make them play each other to make it to Frisco is just grossly unfair. And honestly, it's unfair to the fans because it's not going to provide the best championship game. We saw what the best championship game looks like, and it's not a North Dakota State blasting Towson 35-7. It's not a North Dakota State laying waste to Sam Houston State or anything like that. The best FCS title game that we have had in the last 5 years was the Valley versus Valley Illinois State contest last year. That was one of the most exciting college football games I've ever been at, ever seen, and you're not going to get that now. I just don't understand why the committee doesn't at least seed the tournament 1-16, because the team that was the last non-seeded team, which would be South Dakota State, they're the de facto number 9 seed. They're in a playoff game on the road somehow at Montana, and if they beat Montana, which they probably will, they'll then play the three seed. So in the second round of a 24-team tournament, you've got the number three and the number nine playing because the number nine only has to take a bus to get there. It's so second rate, and the NCAA is an organization that makes so much money off of FBS football and off of the men's basketball tournament. And I'm not asking for the FCS to be subsidized because it doesn't need to be subsidized, but just let it be fair and give a little bit more of a structure to this tournament, because having these five Valley teams beat up on each other in the preliminary rounds is just not the right way to find a champion. But, you know, who am I?
And now he steps down off his pedestal, and we ask him the next question before he stands back up on it. So the possibility of playing SDSU, UNI, and Illinois State even before the Bison would get to Frisco doesn't excite you, is what you're telling me.
Well, no, I mean, that's honestly, and maybe I'm biased, I don't know, I just have the last 4 years of results of playoffs to look at. Going into that game, I mean, yeah, even though the game is in Montana, I think South Dakota State's a better team than Montana. They'll probably win. So that sets up SDSU versus NDSU for like the ninth time in the last 3 years. After that, you know, Northern Iowa is a team that is terrifying to every Bison fan. That game went down to the absolute wire. That was a game with Carson Wentz in it. You're not even Easton Stick. So a potential quarterfinal game against Northern Iowa. And then if Illinois State doesn't get knocked off, the Bison will have to go on the road for the first time since 2010 in the playoffs and beat an Illinois State team that almost beat them in last year's championship game just to get to Frisco. So it seems like a situation that is not very favorable given to a team that, as far as I can tell, has kind of played away in a way that deserves a little favor. I think that that it just is rough. It's tough to understand why the committee, after the season that NDSU put together, especially after losing Wentz, has made them or has given them such a difficult road moving forward.
So say that road, obviously very difficult to travel, as you said, is one that NDSU survives. I mean, how much should the Bison be favored by if they actually do get to Frisco, if they somehow get through this very treacherous road?
30.
30.
I don't really care if it's McNeese or Jacksonville State. If the Bison get through that gauntlet in the playoffs healthy, I have a real hard time believing that anybody from the CAA or really any other conference isn't going to go to Frisco and see that crowd of 95% Bison fans and just get smoked, because this team will have been through so much, and as an extremely young team will have grown so much together and gotten their chemistry to a level where almost of a veteran team. And another thing is, this is the freshest team that NDSU has had going into the playoffs in a long time. I mean, you had guys on last year's team like Colton Hegel and Christian Dudzik who had played like 65 career games. I mean, that's part of, obviously, you miss their experience, but at the same time, it's kind of nice to have a Robbie Grimsley in there who hasn't just been beaten to a pulp by all these championship runs. It's nice to have a Greg Menard who's only a redshirt sophomore, or an RJ Erzendowski. And the freshest kid on the team is probably the quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly make an argument for it. So the Bison open against the winner of the Montana SDSU game, as you alluded to. I mean, do you have a preference? I mean, as the Bison have played both this season.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see Montana. First of all, South Dakota State's better than Montana. And secondly, you know, just as a fan, just seeing that Montana team in the dome with C.J. Smith actually playing, I think it would go really, really badly for Montana, and it would be nice to get a little bit of that retribution.
Well, one guy that certainly hopes he's going to be a part of this hopefully historic playoff run is Carson Wentz. But as Kleiman alluded to today at the presser, Ross, it doesn't sound like that may be as likely as some Bison fans would hope.
Yeah, and I had said that on our last podcast and caught a little bit of flack for it on the internet, saying that I don't expect Wentz to be back just because of some of the language that Coach Kleiman has used in his most recent dealings with the media. And he went the full way. He went all the way today. One of the writers from the forum asked him, you know, how the question was phrased, where does Carson need to be at to play? Does he need to be at 80%? Does he need to be 100% go? And Kleiman basically said he's not coming back. I mean, we have a MRI that's at least 2 weeks away right now. He's just trying to grip a tennis ball. And this could be gamesmanship. I wouldn't put it past Coach Kleiman. Obviously, the initial prognosis was 4 to 6 weeks. The 6 week mark would actually be the first playoff game. So any games missed beyond that are going to be past the initial timetable given. And that doesn't mean that the initial timetable was accurate. That's why it's considered initial. But I just, Kleiman doesn't expect him to be back. I have a hard time believing that he's going to be a part of what they're doing going forward. And at the same time, why fix it if it's not broken? Now, could Easton Stick play in the NFL? Maybe. I don't know. I mean, he seems to be a good athlete. He's got a halfway decent arm, and he's got the size. He's over 6 feet, 2 inches tall. Carson Wentz is a second-round pick, maybe even first, depends on how the pre-draft process goes for him. If you have a kid like that available to you at the FCS level, you're going to use him. And that was kind of the follow-up was, well, if Carson can come back, is he the starter? And that was sort of a snap from Kleiman. I mean, he just said, look, I'm not going to answer that. I don't even know why I would talk about that right now. He's not going to be available. So it sucks. I mean, that's the word for it. It sucks. Wentz has been such an important part of this program. He was able to keep the dynasty going, able to keep the championship run going after the graduation of Brock Jensen. And a part of it, too, is just promoting football in the state of North Dakota. He's a North Dakota native from right smack dab in the middle of the state. He's from the state capital. His brother played baseball at NDSU. They're a Bison family, and he's a Bison, and it sucks that he's not going to probably be able to finish his career. But once again, what a program, right, to just plug in a backup freshman quarterback and rattle off five consecutive victories to secure a bunch of home games in the playoffs, possibly even throughout. I mean, Illinois State could get beat. They have to win two playoff games in order to host NDSU. That's not a given by any means. And you know, four of those five wins were on the road. So how impressive, but it really is just it's sad that Wentz won't be a part of this playoff run. And I think unfortunate too, because as much as I think of Easton Stick as a quarterback and as comfortable as I am with this new offense, I still think that the ceiling for these Bison is higher with Wentz.
I don't think anybody would disagree with you that's probably listening to this, but how about we go to a different sport for the remainder of this podcast? Let's switch over to the Bison basketball team that has two big home games this week, starting with the Montana team from the Big Sky Conference. I mean, what do you know about this Montana team, Ross?
Well, they're good. They've already got a non-conference win over Boise State, which was impressive. They hung with San Jose State. This was a team last year that was pretty good in the Big Sky. They were actually an NIT qualifier. They lost by four in that in the Big Sky Championship game to Eastern Washington, who, if you remember, Eastern Washington actually had a pretty entertaining game in the NCAA tournament. But this was a team that was good enough to play in the NIT last year, and this was a team that played North Dakota State a season ago at home.
And speaking of that game last year, I don't think that ended up as well as Bison fans would have hoped for us.
No, and Coach Richmond said that saying they played poorly in that game last year would have been an understatement. He was not impressed. He actually, right as he got in the press conference today, mentioned to us that he had just gotten done rewatching the Montana film from last year, and he was less than impressed. Obviously, you know, there is kind of a built-in excuse there, although you'd never get it from Richmond or his staff. A.J. Jacobson tweaked his knee in a practice right leading up to that game, and they did not have Jacobson in that contest. Obviously, they did have Lawrence Alexander, who they do not have now, but that was a game where the Bison were playing a little bit shorthanded. They didn't play well, and they lost a game at Montana by 12 a season ago. So certainly, this is a team that's capable of ending the 26-game home win streak for the Bison.
And one guy that's going to be pivotal if the Bison are going to get a couple of home wins this week is leading scorer Paul Miller. I'm curious, Ross, did Coach Richmond have anything to say about Paul today at his press conference?
Yeah, I asked Coach Richmond about Paul today, just said, hey, look, this has been three games and Paul's been your leading scorer in all three. I didn't go so far as to mention L.A. or say, is he taking over the L.A. role? Because I kind of didn't want to get just blasted in the face by some coach speak. But he said, look, this is Paul's improved. At the same time, we're not going to be just one guy, and we have a chance to be a more balanced team than we were ago. He specifically mentioned Kai Cabellas and Malik Clements as being guys that are kind of hitting the ground running. Clements had a very good road trip and then really struggled in the home opener against Valley City State, but he's a guy along with Cabellas that are kind of getting up to speed. So Clements is a guy off the bench that I would not be surprised maybe possibly leading the team and scoring a couple of nights. He's kind of a gunner. He likes to shoot it, has a good stroke, and seems to be able to score the basketball. At the same time, Dexter Werner is certainly a guy that can get you 18-8, 16-10 any night. And A.J. Jacobson was the the preseason player of the year for the Bison, at least. I mean, most guys expected Jacobson to be the team leader. So any of those guys, along with, of course, Paul Miller, could lead the team in scoring on any given night. And I think that Coach Richmond's assessment of his own team is pretty accurate, which is probably good, that this has a chance to be more of a balanced team than last year's squad, which was really predicated on L.A. kind of getting it going, especially from downtown.
Exactly. And, one of the other things I've noticed about this Bison team is that the rotation seems to be stabilizing a little bit. I mean, would you agree with that, Ross?
I would, and it's interesting. Dylan Miller was a kid that really made it clear, both in his recruiting process and once he got on campus, that he didn't want to redshirt. And if you look at him physically, in fact, if you look both at he and Spencer Eliason physically, they are big, bruising posts and guys that certainly could be used against a bigger team if to do nothing but use up some fouls. At the same time, the Bison look like they're going to be comfortable playing eight this year. Last season, obviously, was a seven-man rotation, which was a little bit dangerous. But I would kind of guess that going forward, the rotation is going to consist of the five guys that start. Clements and Cabellas will come off the bench, Clements being the, you know, the 2-4 guy, and then Cabellas being the backup point guard, with Kading and Werner just trading off at the five. I would be very surprised to see Werner and Kading playing together a lot. I'm guessing that more often than not, they're going to sub in for each other, and the Bison are going to continue to play this four-out style of basketball. I actually have sort of a theory and have sort of talked about this with Coach Richmond a little bit. If you ever do see a two-big lineup, it's more than likely going to involve either Werner or Kading and Eliason as opposed to playing the two bigs that are normally in the rotation together. If they do happen to go more traditional, go with two bigs, they're going to throw Eliason in there at the five and let Werner or Kading handle the duties at the four.
So my last question for you, Ross, as we wrap up the only weekly edition of the podcast this week, is the Bison have a big game against the MEAC on the Saturday afternoon against North Carolina A&T. What are you expecting to see out of a Bison team 2 days after stuffing themselves with literally stuffing in turkey?
Well, I did talk to Coach Richmond today about what their plans were for Thanksgiving briefly, and everybody's going to stick around. They're going to take care of the guys that don't have family in the area and kind of keep everybody together over the holiday. With that Wednesday-Saturday schedule and just looking at, you know, what A&T has done so far in their non-conference and their success, or, well, frankly, lack thereof in the MEAC a year ago, I would expect if the Bison are able to take care of business on Wednesday against Montana that they'll go ahead and sweep this homestand because A&T is not that impressive of a squad. Anything can happen, of course, but I think that the focus, if you're a Bison fan, definitely needs to be on that game against Montana on Wednesday night. And I would encourage all of you to go ahead and snap up tickets if you can, because the Shields Arena is a fantastic venue for basketball, even though it's a hockey arena. And it's really fun to be inside that building when it gets rocking. I've seen it for the University of North Dakota game, excuse me, the Fighting Hawks game, and for the South Dakota State game as well last year. Was they got it going pretty good. So that's a fun arena to be in when things are going well, and obviously with a 26-game home winning streak, things are going pretty well.
And with that, that'll do things here for this episode of the Bison Report Radio Podcast. And as always, Ross and I both thank you guys for listening. We hope this only one weekly edition here will do things to get your Bison fixed this week. But as we mentioned early on, it's time to spend some time with your family, with your loved ones here with Thanksgiving on Thursday. And there's only two basketball games this week. And with the Bison football team on a bye, I think everybody's trying to gear up for that first week of December as things are really going to start getting interesting as the Bison head to Ames to face a top five team in Iowa State. And the Bison get to have their first playoff game, so it should be a heck of a week next week. But again, we thank you guys for listening, and as always, if you enjoy what you hear, please, we encourage you to subscribe to thebisonreport.com. It's $5 a month, folks. It's a cup of coffee a day, I say that every time, and it really goes a long way towards supporting us. You can subscribe on iTunes, on Stitcher, or whatever podcasting form that you found us at, and we would love for you guys to give us a rating and a review, as that helps us as well. You can follow Ross on Twitter at Ross Uglum, NDSU on Scout at NDSU on Scout, and me at Ryan Burns MN. So for Ross, for I, we wish you guys a happy Thanksgiving and a happy holidays, and we'll talk to you guys next week. Go Bison.